Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The conflict in Ukraine continues apace. The situation on the battlefield for the Kiev regime is going from bad to worse. Nonetheless, the U.S. and its NATO allies continue to pour in massive amounts of aid and weapons. Diplomacy is still not on the agenda. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Glenn Diesen in Oslo. He is a professor at the University of Southeastern Norway, as well as author of the new book, Russophobia, Propaganda in International Politics. And in Rostov-on-Don, we have Xavier Moreau. He is the founder of the Center of Political Strategic Analysis, Stratpol. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Glenn in Oslo. The big news over the last few days, Glenn, is that we had Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin call his counterpart, his Russian counterpart, Sergei Shoigu, and it was at the behest of the U.S. side requesting a ceasefire. So can you explain to me something? If you're following Western media, Ukraine is winning, Russia is losing, but the winning side wants to have a ceasefire. Isn't it usually the other way around? Thoughts, my friend.
Well, yes, usually when you call in for a ceasefire or try to start up diplomacy, the war is not going your way. But of course, the idea of having a ceasefire now is also very problematic because it's not followed up with a diplomatic suggestion, like a solution to the conflict. If you just have a ceasefire without any diplomatic solution, well, it almost seems like it's just a way to stall in order to get your weapons to the front line. So you can't 1 week say you're going to push $50 billion worth of weapon into Ukraine, and the next day say, let's have a ceasefire until this weapon reaches the front line. But I guess I see some changes now, though, on the reasoning behind it. Because in Donbass, the main war in Ukraine is in Donbass. This is where half of Ukraine's main forces are, the best forces, that is. And they have had the very strong front lines. Again, in the south, on their southern front line for the Ukrainians, they've had the built fortifications over the past 8 years, deep trenches, which holds against artillery. They have the javelins against the armored vehicles if they try to storm it. And in the north, you have from Kharkov, you have a forest, you have the Siversky River. So there's a lot of natural boundaries. But what we've seen now over the past week or two has been, well, past weeks, at least Russia's pierced through a lot of these front lines, because for the first 2 months, they wore down the defenses. And then the last 2 weeks, you see they came down from Izium. They came into Liman, Kremina. Now they surrounded Severodonetsk. The Papasnaya fell, which is very significant in both Russian and Ukrainian media. They recognize how devastating this is because now the Russians can come up behind their front lines and create lots of pockets. In the Western media, it's not mentioned, or they say it's a tactical withdrawal, which is kind of interesting that that the Ukrainians can mention how horrible this is, but we can't do it in our media. And also you see further to the west, which is closer to cutting off the entire Donbass region up from Velika Novosilka. You see also huge pincers coming up from Russia. So it looks like the front lines are collapsing, which is and then it can have a snowball effect. And because for every collapse of Ukrainian defense, it frees up thousands of Russian and the Donbass soldiers who can then just move on. So it does look like over the next 2 weeks, we will see the critical point of this war turning.
You know, Xavier, I looked at the readout of the call between the ministers. And again, you know, can you explain to me, I mean, the Americans on behalf of the Ukrainians, I guess the Ukrainians are not in play anymore. It's the U.S. make calling all the shots. Why didn't Lloyd Austin say a ceasefire and, you know, maybe we'll talk about those 6,400 sanctions? So, I mean, it's kind of like nothing for nothing. I mean, what kind of gambit is this? This is almost to the point of being juvenile. Go ahead.
In my opinion, they want to repeat what they did with Minsk II. It means talking, using this time to reinforce the Ukraine army. And, you know, actually, they asked for ceasefire 2 days after the beginning of the operation. If you remember, Kiev asks for a negotiation, and they get the first negotiation after 4 days, because in my opinion, there is some people in Kiev, and especially in Washington or in London, that perfectly understood that on an operative point of view, Russia has won the war after the first week of fight, because they blocked completely all the Ukrainian army, prohibiting any possibility of offensive. I mean, a coordinated offensive on the front line. So actually, they do what they did during the last 7 years. It's trying to get a ceasefire to reinforce. But in my opinion, another big problem for them is Mariupol, because during the last 2 months, the promise to the Mariupol Ukrainians fighting still in Azovstal, that they will be free from the Russian army, thanks to military operations, thanks to aeromobile operations, thanks to negotiations, thanks to it's the first time in the history of war that people who are losing the war asking to be evacuated in a third country. But it's very, very, it's not just a joke. It's very important, because the plan of Kiev is to organize Mariupol everywhere in the east Ukrainian territory, in Severodonetsk, in Lysychansk, and soon in Dnipropetrovsk, in Zaporozhye. But it will work if people inside the fortress believe that there will be a possibility to evacuate, to retreat, or to win the war. And when Russia will take all these Ukrainians dead or alive in Azovstal, it will be the evidence for every
Xavier, also, it's very important to point out for our viewers is that there's a great deal of interest, particularly on the Russian side, is who are these people? What nationalities are they? Are they individuals in NATO uniforms and other things? It'll be very, very curious to find out about this, because Mariupol was very important to the Ukrainian / NATO side, because that was supposed to be the bastion that would keep the South, and that is not the case here. Glenn, I mean, another thing, it's all these things in play here. I mean, we've talked about it many times. So you have this massive, massive aid package, six times the military budget of Ukraine before the conflict started, almost the same size as the Russia's annual military budget. So you have, and then we have Rand Paul, thank goodness, basically putting some brakes on it here. But I mean, a massive spending bill and then a ceasefire. I mean, does the left hand know what the right hand is doing here? Go ahead, Glenn.
No, it doesn't seem compatible, because again, only 2 weeks ago you saw Austin as well as his British counterpart going out saying that the goal of this war is not simply to repel the Russians, but it's full victory, take back all territories, including Crimea, apparently, and also break the back of Russia, weakening it significantly so it can't project any force in the years to come. I mean, this is a very extreme objective to set, and then to pump in all these weapons, and then to call asking for a ceasefire. It doesn't seem likely, but I also think that's a good reason why it doesn't seem very sincere, this proposal for a ceasefire, now for an actual to end the war. Because again, if it's not supplemented with some suggestion for how to end the war, then it doesn't work. And again, as also the Ukrainian media confirms, the British and Americans, they came in and convinced the Ukrainians to abandon negotiations with the Russians in Istanbul. You know, they were making, you know, they were still far apart, but they were making, moving towards some kind of a compromise. They were accepting some concessions to end the war. But again, I think in order to understand a lot of this, I think it's important to realize that this is, to a large extent, a proxy war. I mean, even if the Ukrainians tomorrow would say, listen, we'll give up everything between Donbass and Kherson, this is not acceptable to the Americans. Again, for 20 years now, America has set its eyes on Ukraine. It's invested billions of dollars. This Black Sea coast is a key objective. And, it doesn't matter if the Ukrainians wouldn't want it. Tell people that, if the United States investing billions of dollars is not to promote democracy or human rights, they do have strategic objectives. I mean, this is not a conspiracy theory. So this is how, not just the US, but this is how all states behave. States have strategic objectives. They communicate them in the language of values. This is how propaganda works. It's extraordinary. Yeah.
It's very interesting. The negotiations in Istanbul have already been mentioned, you know, and it's really interesting, Xavier, how, you know, they have to maybe give Putin an off ramp, give him an out, you know. I mean, they believe their own propaganda, actually, okay? Because the way I look at it, and you've already brought up the Minsk Accords here, why should Russia believe any politician in the West when it comes to Ukraine? It's been one lie after another, okay? And so the way I assess it is that Russia has always been on its own timeline, and it will decide when the conflict is over, and a conflict to be over on its terms. What do you say?
Yeah, I guess in Washington or in London, they perfectly understand that Russia won't stop. And actually, Putin change is a war aims during on the 22 of April. So it's no more question of Donbass and Crimea, it's question of controlling all the source of the coast. And in my opinion, the next step, as soon as the battle in Donbass will be finished, Putin will or the Ministry of Defense will announce the new targets. And in my opinion, it will be more territory, Ukraine territory, in the east of Kiev. So, in my opinion, at this time, the West is I can't understand what they can do to find a solution. And this ceasefire request is just
they can sanction Russia. Oh, they've already done that.
Okay. Because you know, there is a blitzkrieg. They lost. I mean, the West. They lost the economic blitzkrieg. And they are lost strongly. And each day it shows that it's worse and worse than they can imagine. And in front of them, I mean, the West, there is a crisis concerning foods. And it will concern not only the West, but all the world. And Russia is one of the actors that can solve this crisis. So in front of the West, they're going to lose the war. They are going to face a crisis we never saw for a long time. And there is they're asking for a ceasefire, you know,
Well, I mean, it seems very obvious to me in retrospect is that the Russians had long planned this. They looked at every single possible contingency because J.P. Morgan came out with a desk note to its investors that the Russian economy is doing more or less okay. It may have a sharp recession, but it will recover from it. And by 2024, back to business as usual. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
The Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Oslo. Glenn, let's talk about what nobody in Western media wants to talk about, either because they don't have the imagination or they don't have the guts to face reality. But this whole conflict has really all been about Russia's security goals and demands. You know, people can focus in on the battlefield, and I'm amazed with your knowledge of all the geography and of it all. It's really quite impressive. But at the end of the day, because Russia had put forth ideas about reworking European security architecture, got completely blown off by Washington and London and Brussels. And then now Russia is going through the process of making, through the force of arms and its own arguments, and I would even say using international law, to create its own conditions for European security. The West is not prepared for this at all, are they?
No, not at all. And I think this is the key problem ahead of us, because for this war or conflict to really stop one day, we do need to have a settlement on European security. Because again, this all goes back to the concept of, or the problem of, European security, and we delayed it and escalated the whole way. Keep in mind that this all began after the Cold War, when the West withdrew from all these pan-European security agreements and just said, instead of removing dividing lines of Europe, we're just going to move them to the east. Irrespective of all academics, politicians, and intelligence people said that this will probably lead to war. And again, this is what happened in Ukraine. They had a government who committed themselves to neutrality. I know we always say Yanukovych was pro-Russian, but he said, he put into law not joining any military alliances. That means either Russian-led or American-led. But then when the West backed the toppling of Yanukovych in 2014, we removed the neutrality. And as you know, CIA director William Burns, he had already warned in 2008, if this would ever happen, if NATO membership would be a possibility, it will probably be a civil war. And he argued that the Russians would feel compelled, and he wrote, not me, so just to make it clear, that the Russians would feel compelled to go in. They wouldn't want to invade, but they would feel compelled to do so to protect the people in Donbass, but also to prevent NATO from coming to their border. Now, this is not a normative argument from my perspective, saying what is right or wrong. I'm just saying this is what even the Americans' top intelligence people recognize. So my whole point is we have to deal with the question of neutrality and European security. And again, this is what the Russians also, when they first did invade, they stormed towards Kyiv, in leaving their supply lines very open, exposing them, and they wanted to pressure Ukraine. They wanted two things: solve the Donbas issue and commit to neutrality. And again, the Americans and British advised them not to. And so now it keeps snowballing into a bigger and bigger war. But at some point, we do have to deal with these issues going back to the beginning. What are we going to do about European security? This idea we had in Europe that as long as we put a bigger gun closer and closer to Russia's head, that this is the recipe for security. I think we have to rethink some of this. It doesn't mean we can still condemn the Russian war, or we can do whatever we want, but we do have to recognize there are some fundamental problems at the heart of all of this. So I don't see it coming. That's my problem.
Yeah, the problem is that Russia's fighting right now is fighting a military campaign. The West is fighting some kind of ideological one. It has no bearing on what of reality whatsoever. Xavi, I want to slightly change the topic. Finland and Sweden joining the alliance. I mean, I am completely dumbfounded by this. Sweden and Finland have done very well with neutrality, and now they want to destabilize their neighborhood by picking a side. By joining NATO, they are recognizing Russia is an enemy country. For decades, NATO, no, we have no enemies. We're just, projecting security. What's going on in Ukraine now makes it definitively clear. Those two countries, they want to join NATO. They deem Russia as an enemy. Russia will have every right to react. Xavier.
No, concerning Sweden, it's not very original, because it is basically known that the military in Sweden, they always want a push for this, for that, during the last 70 years, we can say. So at least they will get what they want. And it won't change anything because actually Sweden is not so close to Russia as Finland. I'm quite disappointed by Finland because, as you say, they have nothing to win. So in my opinion, it's a question of the current elite in this country. But I'm not sure that it will be so popular in the Finnish population. And so let's see what happens. And let's see if Erdogan will agree to let them, because he's a very surprising guy, actually. And
what we had before, we talked numerous times in December, January, and February before the conflict. And definitively, the Russian side made it very clear that if their demands are not met, that they would reply with military technical response. They've already said that now when it comes to Sweden and Finland. Does anybody understand the causality here? If the Ukraine Donbass thing cannot be resolved, there'll be military technical reaction. They've said this again now when it comes to Sweden and Finland. That should tell everybody everything about what's going on. And they are not members of NATO at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure that the Swedish and the Finnish population will be happy to know that now, since now the Russian nuclear missiles will be in the direction of the country. And of course, as just said Glenn, it's very important to rebuild, but not only a security system in Europe, but in the world. Because actually, the second failure of the United States is on the world, it's worldwide. If you look at what happened in the ASEAN, they refused to condemn the Russian operation in the final act of the meeting that just happened.
Let me go to Glenn on this here. Glenn, Russia and Europe, they're geographical locations, so they're not going anywhere, okay? They are neighbors, and that will never change, okay? So how do we move forward here? I mean, is it possible when we have the end of this conflict here, Russia presents its ultimatums because it's in a position to do that? How do we move beyond that? Or are we just going to be in this kind of frozen environment for a generation? Go ahead.
Well, it remains to be seen, but this is definitely the discussions we should have. And this is... Again, this is my criticism. If this is our plan in Europe and within NATO, just continue to push NATO closer to Russian borders and say this brings security, well, at least have some discussions around it. But I don't see any debates around it. Going back to the Finland and Sweden joining NATO, again, it's quite extraordinary that there's no debate around this. In Finland, 80 years almost, has a very success story of being neutral. And now they're going to join. And my main question: Why is the big rush? Is this no the debates being had, or no referendums, nothing like this? And obviously now during this conflict, emotions are running high. There's a lot of not necessarily paranoia, but hysteria. So right now, you have a lot of people who want to join NATO, and I think they just want, okay, let's get this done now while we have the people on our side. Why not discuss this? What does this actually mean for security? And wait for things to calm down before they rush into NATO. Because again, when you see the media coverage as well, the media coverage, the main line is, aha, look at Putin. He wanted to keep NATO away and he achieved the opposite. Now we're going to come into Finland. But is the point of this alliance to have security, or is it to rub it into Putin's face? It seems so self-destructive. And also the implicit aspect. If we recognize that Russia went into Ukraine to prevent NATO expansionism, and then we're going to expand NATO into Finland, and Scandinavia has been a very calm area during the entire Cold War, exactly because there wasn't any presence here. Finland, Sweden were neutral. Norway, we didn't have any American troops on our soil. Now we do have American troops. We're going to have four military bases, which can be used against the Russians in the Arctic. You're going to get Finland, Sweden. I mean, Scandinavia is going to be a key northern front line against Russia. And again, is this good for power projection or is it good for security? And I think we need to go and have these actual discussions, but we're not having them at the moment. Instead, we're having these debates whether or not we're rubbing something in Putin's face. It's a very dangerous talk we're having.
And exactly what we've learned from this, I mean, with Finland and Sweden, it's all keep in mind that Turkey does have a vote, and Turkey has issues with Finland and Turkey and their support of the Kurds. That's another complicated layer there. So it's not a done deal. Knowing Erdogan, he wants something for something. Everything is the bazaar for him. So we have to put that on the side here. But, you know, if Finland and Sweden in the alliance, it makes very clear that this isn't a Ukraine problem. It's a Russia versus NATO, NATO versus Russia. That it becomes very clear. Because Ukraine, the way the U.S. and its allies are treating Ukraine, they want this conflict to go on to the last Ukrainian. I mean, with allies like that, okay, neutrality could be the best possible thing to happen to you. And the way things stand now, if there is a neutral Ukraine, it's going to be kind of small, don't you think? Go ahead.
Oh, yes, of course. As I told you, the war aims of Vladimir Putin changed on the 22th of April. Now we are talking about Nova Russia, actually. And in my opinion, again, after the battle in Donbas, if Zelensky and his sponsor don't understand the exact situation where they are, so we will hear new claim, new request from the Russian part. And what will stay as a Ukraine, I'm not sure it will be so important to have them neutral or not neutral, because it should be very short, if they, it's really small at least.
And Glenn, just last 30 seconds to you. It looks to me that if this rump state of Ukraine, which is very much in the cards right now, that will just be kind of a ward of the EU to take care of, you know, like a kind of a Kosovo thing, you know, just a very small, very poor place that they're going to have to take on as their responsibility. Last 15 seconds to you, Glenn.
No, I agree. And I think this has been the main consequences. And my heart goes out to Ukrainians who suffered in all of this, because the Ukrainians have been put in the middle of where we're trying to decide the new dividing lines of Europe. And it's being torn from both sides, and they're suffering greatly because of this. So hopefully that should be the point of departure in discussion. How can we stabilize Europe for the benefit of Ukrainians?
A great way to end this program on a positive note with a very tragic situation. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Oslo and in Rostov on Don. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.